Good morning, and welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I am Susan Thompson, your lay leader today, and it's wonderful to see such a great turnout this morning. It must be a special occasion. We are an intentionally inclusive congregation, and we welcome everyone to our church. 3 years ago, Reverend Meg Barnhouse filled our pulpit when she spent the weekend with us as our featured speaker in our annual Distinguished Speakers series. I had the pleasure of helping with the weekend events and serving as the lay leader for a Sunday service. I was absolutely delighted when the search committee announced her as our candidate for settled minister. I wrote Meg recently in anticipation of her return to Austin and quoted my German-American grandmother, revered in my family for her unique use of the English language, who would have said, "We can hardly wait the time off until your arrival." Well, we have now waited the time off. I'd like to invite Michael Kersey, co-chair of our search committee, to provide a more formal introduction.
This is a very exciting day for our church. I mean, to know that after a year in which the Settled Minister Search Committee reviewed applicants from 30 ministers who want to be our settled minister, the search committee, all nine of us, are unanimous and excited in recommending the candidate that we have in our pulpit today. Please join me in giving a warm Austin, Texas welcome to the Reverend Meg Barnhouse.
I'm very happy to be here. When I get happy, I start preaching, but I'm not going to start preaching right yet. The reading is a story that I wrote called "That's the Job." It's in a book called "Did I Say That Out Loud?" The ringtone on my cell phone plays the theme from the TV show Rockford Files. I used to watch that show in the afternoons after school. Jim Rockford was tough, but when the bad guys beat him up, he had bruises for days. Sometimes his back went out. His car was cool and powerful, a Pontiac Firebird Esprit, but it broke down sometimes. He was easygoing, but it was a struggle for him to be patient with his dad and with his friend Angel. When he was angry, he would yell. His friends were loyal, but they tended to take advantage of him. No one on that show was all good or all powerful. No one made the right decision all the time. Rockford was a hero with wide streaks of humanity. I work as a minister these days, and it's a funny kind of job. I have to watch out or people will treat me like a hero. I could start to think I have lots of answers and that I can make things happen, or that I should be nice instead of being good. There's a big difference. The job itself is impossible because people's hearts need more ministering than one person can do, not to mention their minds and their bodies. That's not even touching the need to research and write a sermon a week or the meetings. All I can do is the next thing that needs doing. Sometimes it's the thing right in front of me, but sometimes the urgent-looking thing in front of me is just a distraction from what's really important. I like to think of being a Jim Rockford kind of minister. Taking things on without too much fanfare, knowing I'll have bruises and fall down on a regular basis, fairly confident that if I keep at it, I can do a pretty good job. My mentor, Jim Rockford, wasn't sure of the outcome of a case when he took it. He never bragged to a client that he was the best. He didn't like to take out his gun. Mostly, he just kept at things. He pulled at a loose end until it led him somewhere. He just did his job, whether it took him to the homes of the rich and powerful or to a trailer park at the end of nowhere. The rich didn't intimidate him, and the powerful only slowed him down some. He didn't trust people, naively, because people will do what they're going to do, and they don't always want you to know about it. 20 years as a therapist taught me the same thing. Now, whenever my phone rings, whether it's someone who has just had a bad diagnosis, someone who has an idea for something the church should do, or someone who wants to come talk, I'm reminded of my mentor. If someone comes to me for counseling and they say, "No one else has been able to help me with this," I can answer, "Then I probably won't be able to help you either." But I sure will give it a shot. I can calm down my inner perfectionist, firstborn, Virgo, overachieving self by holding Rockford in mind. I slide into the seat of the Firebird, crank the ignition, and go off to get the job done. By the end, I may have a few bruises. I may have lost my temper once. My back might go out. But hey, that's the job. Well, here we are. I'm aware of the beginning held in this moment. I'm curious about you. I know you're curious about me. I was thinking what I'd like to hear about if I were you, sitting in the pew looking up at this new candidate for your ministry. So that's what I'm going to preach about, what I think I would want to know if I were you. I'm going to talk a little bit about my family, and one of the most important members of my family is my partner, Kaya Hartwood. I'd like for you to stand up so you could see Kaya. Before I start talking about my family, I'm going to start talking about this robe that I wear. It's called a Geneva gown, and it's a hard-working symbol. It's a teacher's black gown, not a priest's garb. A priest can speak for God. A priest is presumed to have some special connection to the divine, even to be able to do miraculous things. Now, I can do miraculous things, but so can you. We believe in the priesthood of all believers. We can do miraculous things like listen to one another and tell the truth, make art, dance, make music like this. I think of myself as a teacher in a teacher's robe. I've gone to school for this. I've studied and I've stacked up years as a student of church life, people, theology, Bible, non-Bible, how to lead a congregation, how to do battle with the religious right. I've been missing them in New Jersey. This robe is one like my mother's uncles all wore in their pulpits in the Carolinas and Tennessee. And this robe reminds me that I'm standing in the broad stream of history and family tradition. They preached the best way they knew how, just like I do. My mother's grandfather, James Hurst Presley, was the minister at the First Associate Reformed Presbyterian Church of Statesville, North Carolina, for 54 years. What I said. He rode his horse to church from the home that he shared with his wife, his 13 children, and one very mean rooster. Dinner time was somewhat chaotic as they ate the food people had dropped off from their gardens or cellars, with guests who sometimes wandered in off the streets. That family had a reputation of having guests of every socioeconomic level, every skin color, no questions asked. The only thing you had to do was everybody had to say a Bible verse before you started eating, which I imagine kept some of the riffraff away. One evening, the second to youngest boy, whose name was Walter, but they all called him Sad Eye, Sad for short, he was being punished. So Sad was in a table by himself in the corner, and everybody else was at the main table, and they were going around saying their Bible verses. And David, the youngest, said Jesus wept for like the fourth time that week. But Sad, feeling sorry for himself, piped up in the corner saying, "Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies." Two of those children became ministers like their daddy, and then the rest of the boys became doctors. Probably had a lot of experience binding up the wounds that that rooster made. He would just jump out of the kids' legs and just slash them to pieces, so everybody had a lot of doctoring experience. My great-grandfather retired from 54 years at the same church in this way. He turned 80, preached the next Sunday. After he finished his sermon, he said, "I do not believe..." You know, he's talked like this, I do not believe that a man should preach after he is 80 years old. So today, I will retire. Brother Matthews, would you have the prayer? Brother Matthews startled, stood up, started to pray. Everybody had their head bowed. My great-grandfather walked out of the church and went home. Now, I like parties too much, so that is not the way I would do it, but it's me. I wear this robe, which is like the robe my dad and his dad did not wear while they were preaching. My grandfather, Barnhouse, was a famous radio evangelist in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. You could still wake up and hear his sermons on the radio in South Carolina Sunday mornings. I bet they're somewhere in Texas, too. He spoke all around the world. People named their children after him. They bought his books, still do. He preached on Romans for 7 years. I mean, straight through. Sometimes one word at a time. He preached in striped trousers and a cutaway jacket with tails. My dad doesn't like wearing a robe when he preaches because he worries that people will think he's wearing it to be superior to them in some religious way. "I don't want them to think that I think I'm better than they are because of some stupid robe," he says. He actually said the other day when I asked him about why he didn't wear one. I said, "Yeah, you want them to think you're better than they are because you're just better." And he said, "Yeah." It's a joke. I mean, he really did say that, but I wear the robe just to signify that I went to school to learn this work, and I wear it to remind myself of my link to the preachers in my mother's family who were journeyman preachers, and the preachers in my father's family who struggled with being rock star preachers, who chafed under the idea that they were part of something larger than themselves, part of a denomination that had demands in terms of credentialing and ethics and behavior and connection. I like that, being part of something larger than myself. I feel that all the time. I'm part of a congregation that's larger than myself. I'm definitely trying to fill a role that's larger than myself. I always want to remind myself and my congregation of that, so I wear the robe. Plus, it saves me thinking about what I'm going to wear. Mark Twain is said to have said that preaching is the very ecstasy of presumption. It's kind of an odd job. You're paid to think about things and then talk about the things you think about. In a Unitarian Universalist congregation, you're talking and thinking among people who talk very well and think even better. You reflect on your life and the life of the congregation. You connect your congregation to the life of the community. And you're called to be intellectually intelligent as well as emotionally intelligent and present those two things in perfect balance in every single sermon. And in your daily life. You're called to help the people run their congregation by continuing to hold up the vision that they have, the vision that they're funding with their goodwill, with their hands, with their hearts, with their energy, with their minds and their means. You're friendly with everybody, even though you can't be anybody's special friend, because as soon as you're somebody's special friend, then they don't have a minister anymore. And the job involves a lot of social interaction, which I love. I have people say, come on, this is a party. Let your hair down. You're not a minister here. And I say, you know, I love this job because I get to go to parties and it's part of my job, but this is part of my job. I love interruptions. I love stories. I love getting to know folks. I crave meaningful interactions, child dedications, weddings, memorial services. I crave peaceful hanging out. I'm going to close by reading another story. This is called Brick by Brick. All summer, workers have been building a brick wall along the road by my neighborhood. Against the brutal heat, they stretch a tarp overhead to get a little shade. I've watched them take bricks in their dusty brown hands, one by one, butter them thickly with mortar, line them up, and tap them down row by row. One man who looks to be in his 70s is the leader. His skin is the color of bittersweet chocolate. His beard is gray. Slender and tall, he moves from one group of bricklayers to the next, reaching and bending, looking like a heron in a marsh. When he pauses, he stands very straight. I see him teach the others how to do the work. He stoops over to look at a line of bricks, hands on his thighs, inspecting the work. And sometimes as I drive by, I see him put his hand on the back of the person he's teaching. Often they're both smiling. He looks like he loves what he's doing. I wonder how he can love building walls day after day, handling bricks, teaching the art of laying bricks. Is it the teaching he loves? Seeing how his students learn what their styles are, how their work shows their character? Does he love the wall itself? Does he know when it'll be done? Does he look forward to seeing it finished, or does he love the process? The feel of the bricks in his hands, the squish of the mortar, the challenge of making the symmetry of pillars and archers, the geometry of it. I think from the look on his face that he loves the process. I imagine that he never thinks about the end of the project, the completion of the wall. I think he'll go on to the next wall as if it were just a continuation of this one, and then the next one, and the next, and never be bored. I want to be like that. And I am, I guess. In my job as a minister, the bricks are stories. I hear stories of family and work, stories of loss and reconciliation, stories of rejection and disaster, illness and healing, birthing and dying. I tell stories every Sunday and in between, teaching, challenging, confessing, inviting people to learn and laugh and think. Brick by brick, story by story, we build a church, seeing the patterns, the symmetry, the plain joy of setting one story on the other, sustained by the strong and beautiful structures they make. We will never be finished. It's okay. Remember the way of the wind and breathe and blow. Remember the way of the fire and sparkle and glitter and glow. Remember the way of the water and ebb and flow. Remember the way of the earth and grow. Go in peace.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.